This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome to the Place to Be Nation reaction show for the Elimination Chamber 2015. And with me, I have from Wrestling Culture, Dylan Hells, from Exile on Bad Street, Chris Zellner, from Brainbuster, Johnny Sorrow, and from the Segunda Caída blog, we have my buddy Phil Schneider hanging out with us tonight. And guys, tonight, Elimination Chamber, 2 weeks after our last show, 2 weeks before Money in the Bank. Now, let's start with an open forum here. Did anybody watch Stardust versus Zack Ryder?
I did, and I actually thought it was one of the best matches on the show. which is to say that it was okay. Zack Ryder worked really hard and did a missile drop kick onto the apron in a pre-show opener that was unadvertised, which tells you how desperate he is to make his career relevant, and I kind of felt bad for him. But yeah, it was skippable, but so was most of this show.
Okay. I know Chris and Phil did not watch the match. Johnny, did you check it out?
I was watching it while preparing food.
What was better, the food or the match?
Oh, the food.
Okay.
All right, dude. I had brats, Italian sausages, and chickens.
All right. Sounds fun.
But like I was interested more into what they're doing with the crossover with the dude from Arrow.
Apparently
going to do that at SummerSlam because I was talking to Pete last night. Apparently he's a huge WWF fan. And because Pete goes to all those cons where Comic Cons with the wrestlers do autographs.
And they are absolutely cons. That is a fact.
But apparently he was telling me that Stephen Amell always comes over to the wrestler booths to see them and hang out with them and everything. So at least this time, WWE is doing something with a show that's relevant and a current hit.
Yeah, but this means true. Stardust will be on television every week for the next 2 months.
Yeah, it's going to be rough, man. I don't know.
It's good to see that this podcast can deliver Arrow deep cut spoilers. Johnny really showing his worth.
It's true. But fuck it, Phil. I mean, it's true. When the announcers spend the whole fucking time talking That's about the is. Guy from Arrow, then yeah. the fucking Johnny's point is relevant. So
yeah, blow me.
Yeah, there you go. All right, moving on. Daniel Bryan on Miz TV. Does anyone really think he's coming back, Chris?
I think he definitely wants to. Will it happen? Who knows? But he's not giving up the dream.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of felt like it was just a way to keep the crowd positive. Yeah, I'm coming back. Don't worry about it. What about you, Dylan?
I just thought it was funny listening to Miz be the voice of reason. You should quit. You're shitty at marketing yourself. You don't do enough to get to push yourself and promote yourself, considering how over you are. Every single thing he said was true.
He was Ari Gold, but dressed up like Kanye. I loved it.
Yeah, so that was kind of amusing. But I don't want Brian to come back, to be honest. I mean, I'm not one of these super moralizing fans, but I really don't want to see him come back because I would rather him not come back than do a bunch of stop and go shit for the next 3 or 4 years, which I think is likely to be the case if he does come back. So, even from a selfish fan perspective, I think if he does come back and we get all the stop and go stuff, it screws up all the storylines for everybody else too. So I really, not only is it, I don't think beneficial for his health, but I also think it's not really beneficial for the company. So I hope he doesn't come back.
I have no problem with him as a spokesman or someone who promotes WWE Network in Zimbabwe or something, but I'm with you guys. What I'm saying, man, just like whenever they need a famous face, the way they push Hulk Hogan out there or Ric Flair, he's a little bit more current than those guys. He'll help them, with younger fans. So I think that he can be the same kind of spokesman for the company. I don't think he needs to get back in the ring. Phil, you have any opinions on this?
I mean, I assume he's coming back to wrestling. And, you know, Ray is back having great matches. So, you know, maybe 6 months off or something like that. Let his body heal and work only pay-per-views like Brock Lesnar. He should be fine.
But the thing with Brian is Brian is his own worst enemy. He's going to go out there and he's going to just try to do all the shit he wants to do, take all these serious bumps on his head and neck, which when he just came back was doing like a maniac. And he just, he'll put himself in worse condition. Saving from himself.
Well, I don't think it's anyone's responsibility to save the worker from themselves unless it's like a life threatening thing. You know what I mean?
Well, but, this could be.
No, but I'm saying with Edge, they told him, you take one more bump, you're dead. Okay, cool. You know what I mean? With Daniel Bryan, if they say, okay, there's potential nerve damage, blah, 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 and he keeps wrestling, then, well, he's a fucking idiot. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing. We really don't know what's going on. Nobody's really said anything.
But so, if he's cleared to wrestle, then it's his choice. I don't think.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. And that's what I'm getting at. It's not if he can sell tickets and draw, you know, then fucking, you know, the company's going to use him. I don't know. But anyway, let's think we can worry about that when we actually see him back in a ring or we know if he's definitively coming back. Let's move on to the show.
I mean, Joey Matthews is out there taking huge bumps every week. Yeah. And I know that he's got a horribly damaged neck that could snap any second now.
Yeah. So maybe, I don't know. I mean, I don't know his health, you know, but you're probably right, but he probably got a doctor's clearance somewhere, somehow, you know what I mean? So anyway, let's move on to the show proper. Tag Team Elimination Chamber. We're going to start with you, Phil, on this one. What did you think of this match?
It was kind of a shit show. It was sort of an amusing shit show. It was definitely the better of your two Elimination Chamber shit shows for shit shows. I mean, it wasn't very good, but I kind of enjoyed Titus O'Neil beating people up. I think it really reminded me of how much they miss Ray in these. Because Ray was like the king of Elimination Chambers, and you had some guys trying to be your newest attempt at fake Ray, trying to do Ray Elimination Chamber spots was not good. And it actually reminded me of what was like that TNA cage match on their first Monday night show. Where Homicide got stuck.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I was like, oh, this is happening here. So, I mean, that was pretty. I mean, once it got into your hood slam portion of the match, I thought that was pretty good. it really felt like you needed also Harper and Rowan really should have been in there instead of the Ascension, who have the most Bush League gimmick. I mean, they really do feel like guys that should be working like ECWA battle royals as opposed to like pay-per-views on regular shows.
Mr. Ulala.
Yeah, exactly. Like Mr. Ulala and the Ascension. I mean, they're not nearly as good as the J Team.
Oh no.
Which I think I've said before. As good as the J Team versus the SATs in a cage, which live like 12 years ago. So, you know. But I liked the once it got into New Day versus Primetime Players, I thought it was pretty good.
I think this was an issue where the order of the teams really screwed this match up. Like, Ascension had no business being in there from the beginning, you know? But, Chris, what'd you think?
Yeah, they got two eliminations, didn't they?
Yeah, they got several, and that's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's insane. Up. Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, this was, like, yeah, I totally agree with Phil about the shit show. So, this was a match that had some good performances individually. Cesaro was awesome as usual in this match. He's great against the Lucha guys, and no matter what match he's in, if he ever worked in a Lucha Libre promotion one day, he'd be one of the best bases around. Well, he already is now, but he was great in this. Titus was great. Big E was bumping like a motherfucker in this match. Big E was hustling he was hustling more than the Lucha guys were. And Kalisto and Cerrito with their flying stuff off the top of the cage. It was a cool spectacle. Although Kalisto, I think, kind of got nervous there when he was hanging up there. If he was up there so long, you would have thought maybe he would have come down with more of a flashier dive than just falling. But, yeah, I did enjoy the PTP New Day section. I thought that was the best part of the match. And I mean, it's going to be good to see them work a straight match whenever that happens. So, yeah, it was the better of the two chamber matches, no doubt.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hesitant to say that might be a good match. I just, because I like the primetime players. I just, they're not over right now. So, you know, maybe if they give them a chance to get over on TV.
Well, this crowd stunk a lot tonight, too.
Yeah, so. No, I know, but I'm saying it's easier to be over in a fucking elimination chamber than it is in just a straight tag, too. So I don't know. What do you think, Dylan?
I mean, this wasn't an unwatchably bad match, but I thought it was pretty bad. I don't, you know, I figured coming in this would be a spot fest clusterfuck, but what was interesting to me is that it really wasn't worked that way. It was like almost like they tried to subdue the guys, not necessarily to keep them from having a spot fest, because ultimately that's, I guess, what you would call this, but to keep them from doing too much stuff, I guess. I mean, I thought it was an odd choice to perch both of the Hispanic people under 5 feet tall on top of pods for 10 minutes each. I don't know what that was about. That may have been some, it was just bizarre. Like the idea of Kalisto being trapped on top of the New Day's pod, I think was kind of novel, but it ended up just being really weird. New Day has been a great act since they've turned heel, and Cesaro and Kid are, I think, a really great tag team. Actually, honestly, with the exception of the Ascension, I think every team in this is at least good. But the problem was the match order and the order of the eliminations, was just awful. The Ascension are not over, and they put them in there to sort of control the match like they were the ring generals. And I just thought that was a really, really stupid decision. And, I agree that the best part of the match was, the end when the primetime players and the New Day were in it together. But the problem was, by that point, my interest was almost completely gone. And the crowd, which was bad all night, was completely gone by that point. It also, it's really stupid to put the primetime players in a position where they eliminate Cesaro and Kid in a smart elimination, I'll grant you, after the Cesaro swing, like kind of a novel elimination. But Cesaro and Kid are the most over team in the entire match. So you have these guys eliminate them, and you could hear the crowd just deflate the moment that happened. It was like,
that is a fact.
And that happens, and it's like, well, yeah, that's a great way to get the primetime players over. Have them beat the only team in the match people give a shit about after they've just been subjected to 15 minutes of the Ascension playing ring general. Whoever laid that out's a fucking moron. It was one of the worst laid out matches I can remember in the last year, and they've had some really poorly laid out matches on TV, so that's saying something.
And then they did it again.
You said that you thought that the everybody in there was good. Why are we sure the Lucha Dragons are any good?
They've had some fun matches on Superstars. I mean, I actually thought Sin Cara was
better. They've done good on NXT too.
I thought Sin Cara was better in this match than a lot of the people that are allegedly better than him. None of these teams are great, with the exception of Cesaro and Kid. I think New Day may eventually be great if they stay together and they can work around Kofi being Kofi. But the match, it wasn't unwatchable, wasn't horrifically bad or anything, but it should have been a lot better than it was, and it very easily could have been if they had just put different teams in at different times. I mean, why did Cesaro and Kid not start? If they weren't going to be one of the last two teams in there, it makes absolutely no sense to have the Ascension in there with your Lucha Dragons and Matadores instead of Cesaro and Kid. The only reason that would have made sense is if Cesaro and Kid were being booked to go to the very end, which they weren't.
The other thing is the face heel dynamic too, because all of those teams would have been faces. So ideally, you'd want a heel team in. I think that's their logic. Yeah. I'm not saying it worked. I'm just saying I think that's their logic.
Also, so what a bummer that this happened this year and not last year, right? Like, how awesome would be the team that gets the advantage of three guys in a pod being the Shield?
Or Harper and Rowan, or the
Wyatt family, and then the Rhodes brothers, and Harper and Rowan,
Then add Cesaro Kid and maybe New Day.
But those guys weren't around then.
Real Americans.
Ray and Big E, the real Americans. I mean, there were some guys who were really great teams back then. And now you kind of look at the teams like,
yeah. I don't know. What did you think, Johnny?
I
loved it. That.
I'm glad you did, Phil.
Oh, seriously, what did you think?
I thought it was a giant clusterfuck until it got to the end with the last two teams. Just like everyone else saying, I'm agreeing with you. That's when I love Titus just tossing motherfuckers around, throwing them into the fucking chains and shit. You looked like a fucking beast. But to me, it was like an old Ring of Honor scramble cage where nothing makes sense, you know. Then, but the finishing sequence I liked a lot. So yeah, there you go. And then compared to the other.
Oh.
The other Elimination Chamber match. Then I was like, "Boy, this wasn't as bad as I thought initially." Because boy, the other one was really bad.
It was rough, and we'll talk about that one later. Now let's move on. Next, the women's match here. Now, Chris, we'll put you on the spot.
Yes.
Because when we talked about six women, we would start a division with.
Yeah.
All three of these women were on your list. The only one I had was Paige. You had all three women. And yeah. They had plenty of time to have a match here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good. So.
It was sloppy. Yeah, there were some sloppy spots, especially the Naomi reverse Rana, which I just saw Rich Swann do on Trevor Lee on Evolve that looked far more better than this one. Yeah, it just went way too long.
But wait a minute. We had good long women's matches in NXT.
Well,
these women want long matches. These are part of your crew.
Yeah, I know.
That's why I'm not letting you up here.
Yeah, it was just it wasn't good. It had spots. Some spots better than the match before it though. So I mean, coming off of Sasha and Becky Lynch, there's no way in the world these girls got a chance, and they proved it.
Okay, what about you, Dylan?
You know, it wasn't any good. I didn't hate it. It's like, you know, I don't want to say it's unfair because it's not like these ladies have been going out and having great matches or anything, but triple threat matches usually suck. There's no reason this was likely to be any better. Had this been a one-on-one match, would it have been better? I don't know. I don't even really care. I thought Paige looked really good at times and then really bad at others in the match. The botched Rana spot was pretty bad, but I mean, you know, on the, I watched the AAA, the Lucha World Cup the other day, ACH and Mysticies did like three or four Rana spots that were 7,000 to 8,000 times worse than that. So, I'm used to seeing bad Rana spots at this point. In 2015, so I didn't think it was any particularly offensive spot. To me, the most bizarre thing about it was that Nikki Bella won the way she won. I just thought that was really odd. If for Paige to come back and then Naomi, presumably they wanted to do something with her, and because they made a big deal out of her turn, they've given her a lot of TV time, and now I guess that's over already. So I have no clue what they're doing with the Divas title.
I got an idea. I think they want Nikki to break AJ's record. To erase that off the books.
I mean, that may be, but that doesn't it's still like odd the way they've booked this stuff. I don't know. I mean, it was not a good match. I didn't think it was terrible. I liked it about as much as I liked the previous match, which is to say not very much.
Yeah. I thought it was trash. I mean, Johnny, did you even watch this match?
Barely. The original, the first camera angle of that Rana thing made you go, what the fuck was that? Was it just a bad camera angle on a cool move? And then they did the reverse angle shot and you went, ooh, no. that could have been tragic.
But let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Johnny. I mean, because you watched the Sasha Banks match the other night. I mean, you've been watching the NXT women matches, man. They've been tearing it up. I mean, do these women in WWE have any shot at tearing it up, or do they just suck? I mean, or is there a curse? I mean, what do you think the reason is? Because here's a guy I'm talking to you where every time it's kind of like a running joke. Okay, Johnny took a piss break during the women's match, but during the NXT shows, we never say that. And Dylan's talked about, you know, the grading the women on a curve and how that's not fair. And I mean, what's it going to take for women to have a good match in WWE? Because they even had time tonight. Good 10 minutes.
Well, probably to have both the time they had, but the three people involved aren't Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch. they're not them. They're Nikki fucking Bella, who has become passable. You know, Paige is and Naomi, who's like, she's very athletic, which just means she's black and does, you know, flips.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, really? Come on. What is the code word? The code word in WWF for years when someone's like the most athletic person.
No, that, okay. I thought that was your thought. Okay. No, you're right. And that is kind of what they pass, right? Like, yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. That's
it's Dylan. Like, that's like actually thug. It's like, yeah. Saying thug now. It's athletic there.
Yeah. Dylan, that's actually something you've been railing against the WWE for years, you know.
Oh yeah,
you know, about their pseudo racism there. What about you, Phil? Did you even bother with this match?
I kind of watched it out of the corner of my eye. I was doing a crossword with my wife.
All right, okay, well,
it looked good out of the corner.
It looked bad out of one eye. All right,
bad out of one eye. I didn't. I saw that Rana.
All right, let's move
on. I will say that Ray Horace and TJ Perkins versus Tony Nese and Caleb Conley was on at the same time and way better than that match. Way better.
Okay, well, we'll take your word for it, Chris. Dylan, next match. John Cena versus Kevin Owens. I know you thought this would end with neither guy getting beat. I thought Owens was going to get beat clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring, sent back to NXT to drop his title, then come back. Owens with the shocking clean as a sheet, 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. What do you think?
That's kind of what I thought was going to happen. I wish that the news that he was going to get signed, that he was, you know, being brought up to the main roster, I wish that wasn't known, because like, on the one hand, it raised my interest in this match because I thought, wow, Owens might actually have a chance to win. But on the other hand, it made it less shocking when he did win. It was like, I mean, it was still shocking in a way, but it was also like, that makes sense. They actually did something that makes sense. You know, I thought the non-finish was the smarter thing to do before the first two matches of the show. And I said on Twitter at the time, I was like, there's no way they can do another, they can't have another shitty finish on the show already. So I was really hoping Owens was going to win at that point. I thought this was kind of a genius match in the sense that they basically had your Kevin Steen, Indiegogo, everybody kicks out of 752,000 finishers. People fall on their head. Guys get hit with a move, they lay around for a few minutes, and they're back on offense. Like, all the things that normally annoy me, but it actually made sense in this context because for two reasons. One, it was portrayed as a really, really important match, so it's slightly less annoying to me on paper when that's the case, as opposed to, like, the third match on a PWG show. And secondly, it was basically John Cena losing to Kevin Owens / Steen in Kevin Owens' style of match. I mean, Cena went into war with Kevin Owens in his style of match, and he lost. And whether or not that's what they were going for, who knows? But that's what my takeaway from it was. The real thing to me, I mean, Kevin Owens' performance was really good. He played his role very well. He's knocked out all the sort of sticky stuff that I know both me and Phil hated on the indies. His command in the ring, I think, on top, I thought was pretty good. But really, to me, the big takeaway from this is even on a night where John Cena was calling spots as audibly as I've ever heard a wrestler call spots, his performance was absolutely amazing for the simple fact that I can't think of any other top babyface in the history of wrestling who would not only have that match, not only let a guy like Owens come in and have his style of match with him and put him over strong just on work alone, but then lose to him clean as a whistle on his finish. I mean, there's nobody else that would have done that. I didn't think it was a match of the year level match. I've seen a lot of people saying that. I'm not a big enough Owens mark, frankly, for it to be that level for me. But it was a real good match. And it ultimately, even if Owens loses the second match in a couple weeks, which I think he will, I don't think it matters as much. This, funny enough, this was the win that Rusev needed, but you know, it was awesome to see. So easily, hands down, by far the best thing on the show.
Cena only puts clean indie guys over clean. He doesn't lose to like Performance Center dudes like Husky Harris. He doesn't lose to those NXT Invader guys like Husky Harris and Ryback
and Wade Barrett.
And Wade Barrett. No, he didn't lose to those dudes. He doesn't lose to Performance Center guys. He's only put, you have got to have had a Gabe endorsed 5-star match for Cena to put you over clean. Well, that's the rule.
The only guys he has jobbed to in the last 10 years clean has been Bryan, Rock, Lesnar, and Owens. That's it.
CM Punk.
Yeah, Punk.
Punk. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. So there's your list.
That's it?
That's it.
Man, I don't know. I have to go back and see that.
But yeah, I saw that on Twitter earlier and retweeted it out. I couldn't believe it, but yeah.
I'd have to double check. We have to do some fact checking on that.
He never lost clean to like Collie. Clean, Collie would be never clean. Weirdly clean.
Yeah, clean finish.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know, Johnny. What did you think of this match, man?
This was definitely, of course, you know, it'd be stupid to say this was obviously the best thing on the show, and I thought one of the best things I've seen in a long time. I enjoyed every minute of this. I loved it. Dylan, you're dead on right, because I saw you made that point. You're like, John Cena is the most, the most giving main event guy in WWF ever. And I guess so. He's that confident in his self. To, you know, be like, I don't care, you know, like, yes, we're gonna put this young guy over like this, and who's doing bong hits? It's not me.
For once.
Yeah. Sounds like a fucking, I don't know, motorcycle taking off in the background.
Anyway, I loved it. And I know a lot of people were complaining about like finishing spam, but in this case, it worked.
But they only kicked out of the AA once and the powerbomb once. You know what I mean?
I think what people were saying by that is that Owens pulled out a bunch of moves that he hasn't used in NXT yet.
Oh, that's fair. But I'm just saying they weren't finishers in the sense that, you know what I mean? They were big
moves. Oh, I agree.
Big moves.
They're big moves. And there was someone who complained that, oh, well, Cena kicked out of the pop-up powerbomb. But like I said, it's because Owens went for it too early.
It was very much a near-fall-driven match.
Absolutely true. It was a near-fall-driven match. It was a 2.9 match. But I'm saying it wasn't like – and we've seen this, Dylan, before, where guys – I mean, where Cena's done like 4 or 5 AAs, and they just kick out of the AAs or they'll kick out of like X amount of RKOs, and then finally they'll pin. You know, it was
but see, when you're
– they didn't go back to the well over and over and over.
Let's say some WrestleMania main event like Triple H, Undertaker, or those ones with Michaels and everything where people complain about that. This is the guy who's like his first pay-per-view match. You know, he's basically unknown. So they do that style of match with all those kickouts, the 2.9s, with this guy, and the crowd who doesn't watch NXT and isn't quite sure who this guy is, suddenly he's a fucking star. That makes him a fucking star. And then he wins clean, which I did not see coming, even though I did know about that he'd signed the contract.
My main problem with indie, too, I mean, you know, Guy has probably written a gazillion words over my life about how much I bothered by indie 2.9 matches. But my usual issue is where it feels like it should have ended 7 to 9 minutes before it did. Right. Actually, I watched a recent PWG show where everything would have been really good if they had an editor to edit this down a little bit. Every match kind of feels like a Cimino film where you need somebody to go in there and tell them to cut down some of the roller skating. Whereas this didn't really feel like at any point that this needed to end. I never thought this needed to end earlier than it did. Like at no point was during a kickout where I thought, well, that should have been the end of this match. And now this is just, you know, meaningless after that. So it didn't bother me as much as it does on a lot of other.
Well, Phil, what did you think of the match?
Oh, it was great. I thought it was great. I mean, by far
saved the show, right? I mean,
oh yeah. And then, you know, Steen has never been my dude. He's a guy like at points actively disliked on the indies, and you know, he's a guy who my wife was kind of half watching this with me, and she goes, that guy kind of looks like a slightly in better shape Kevin Smith, which is really funny that that's the dude who's going to get pushed to the moon out of all your indie guys that get signed. The guy looks like he's in the worst shape, you know, the guy with like the neck beard and the sort of like, you know, half mongoloid eyes. That's the guy out of all your indie superstars that's going to go get your rocket strapped to his ass pushed. But I thought he was great. I mean, I thought the match was great, and I thought Cena is ridiculous. It's ridiculous how good Cena is working indie dream matches. He's like your guy. I mean, it's like he's so good at that. It's such a strange skill. I mean, I honestly, you know, and you know, I think that I kind of, it felt to me like middle of the match. I mean, it kind of feels like Owens is going to win this. That'd be pretty weird. I wonder how he's going to do it. And I didn't really think clean in the middle of the ring, although that's kind of the way that Cena put you over when he put you over.
That you know? Package pile driver tease was a great moment.
Yeah.
You knew he wasn't going to do it, but it was they led you to believe for just a split second that he was, which is, you know, really, I mean, the funny thing is the Corpus Christi crowd, which was, you got to remember, this was a house show crowd. They didn't even know they were getting this until it was way late. But they probably had a lot of them probably had no clue of what was going on. But for, you know, geeks like us, it was like, oh, this is a great moment.
Right.
Yeah. Chris, what'd you think, bud?
Yeah. I mean, this was a star making performance for Kevin Owens. And it, you know, Cena was kind of shaky early on, but boy, did he step it up when he needed to. And this, it had a feeling of a mid 90s All Japan type finish run there where, you know, everybody was kicking out of finishers and stuff like that. But it wasn't, like Phil said, it wasn't over the top too long, like some of the indie dream matches have been over the past few years. So I'll give him credit for that. And Triple H, you know, when Triple H gets behind somebody like this is what happens. So, hopefully that's a great sign for the future. But yeah, John.
I'm just wondering. Like when Vince took a look at Owens and looks at him and goes, "Paul, are you serious?" And he's and how many like family favors did he have to, you know, call in and say,
he immediately pops. Made him get new gear. So that was one thing that Vince touched to get the new gear. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Looks good. So
it's crazy.
He lied to him. It was like, "Oh, Vince, this is Dr. Jerry Graham's grandson."
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Oh, I won't bring him in.
And think about Kevin Owens' shorts were more professional than John Cena's shorts. So, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy.
Hey, what is that, man? I mean, because I thought they were, like, adamantly opposed to that kind of look. Like, you know, that's like CM Punk throwback.
It's Triple H, man. It's his influence. His guys. This is his.
He's a guy with, like, you know, body, you know, a huge collection of bodybuilding magazines.
It's crazy.
They put the push by the guy with my physique before I started playing a lot of basketball.
Yeah, like, it's crazy. Like,
I've got a smaller gut than Kevin Owens at this point. And it's really weird.
And Sami Zayn, you know, Sami Zayn's got like a dad bod. I mean, he's not in the best of shape either. So, I mean, yeah, you look at the two darlings of NXT are not the Triple H prototype of wrestler like a, you know, like a Drew Galloway used to be, or Sheamus, you know, guys like that.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I think Samoa Joe.
Look at the Joe.
Yeah. Joe,
for God's sakes.
I tell you what, though, I'd kill to have Drew Galloway back in this promotion right now.
Oh, Galloway was NXT. Awesome tonight. Oh, that match with Roddy Strong was great.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do part two. We're going to finish this show up. You're listening to Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly.
Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport, featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Senior, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber.
The Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
A host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Okay, welcome back to the Place to Be Reaction Show for Elimination Chamber. And guys, we just talked about John Cena versus Kevin Owens. And now we're going to go into a match that is not John Cena versus Kevin Owens. And that is Adrian Neville versus...
just Neville.
Neville. Oh, sorry.
Just Neville.
Versus Bo Dallas. I actually didn't think this was too horrible. I thought it was actually pretty good, man. With no heat, but it was pretty good. Johnny, what'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. Completely. No heat because of what it had to fucking follow. But as a match alone, I enjoyed it. I thought it was... it was good. It was a good match between these two guys. That Neville was obviously, he's obviously the star, you know, Bo Dallas is going to be Bo Dallas. Yeah. And, you know, Neville's the one getting the push. I like that they reference. I like they reference. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but Dallas was the one doing the cool shit, like choking him with the fucking apron and the,
oh no, no, no. I thought he was great. I'm saying, but it, obviously the guy who's being pushed forward here is it's just the ongoing push of Neville. Here they referenced a lot of NXT references, apparently, you know, of course, on this show, that Neville was the one who beat him for the NXT title, and they had a perfectly fine, serviceful match that should not have followed one of the biggest surprises on a pay-per-view in a long time.
Phil, I know back on the indies, you were not a Pac guy, okay, by any stretch. What do you think of him so far?
I'm still not a Pac guy. Although, to be fair, I was taking Ruthie out to poop on the balcony during this match, so she did great. Ruthie pooping on the balcony, she was a star, so I got no comments on this.
Only on the reaction show, folks. Only on the reaction show. Chris?
Yeah, those guys had a hard time following up the match before, and they got the quote-unquote dreaded death spot tonight, and... I mean, Neville looked okay. I mean, he hit his finisher clean. There was some decent stuff in the match. Although, it is definitely obvious that Bo Dallas is Mike Rotundo's son. And in a lot of ways, as far as in the ring work. So, yeah, it was fine.
Okay, Dylan, any thoughts on this one?
I mean, the match was okay. I mean, I agree that it was in a bad spot on the card. To me, if you're going to put this match after Cena and Owens, especially the way that match was booked, not only in terms of who won, but the style of the match they worked, you really have to let Neville do a lot more than what he's done. I mean, Will, you came on here in the past and have talked about how, you know, Neville doesn't come across as the way he's presented, you know. And I thought this match was a really glaring example of that, because you had the previous match where they, you know, were busting out every spot known to man between the two of them. And then Neville comes out and he gets that awesome moonsault early, kind of a misdirection spot, looked really good. And I thought, okay, they're going to do the right thing. And then Bo Dallas works a cravat for 4.5 hours.
Right.
I mean, I don't get me wrong. I thought Bo Dallas took a really sick bump in the corner. I thought they did a fine job constructing a sensible match that would have been really good as, like, you know, the second best match on a decent episode of Superstars. But it was really oddly placed on the show. And I thought the idea to work the match that way coming after that match was especially bad. I mean, yes, it would have been impossible for them to follow it, but if they had sent them out there for 5 minutes and had Neville run through a bunch of crazy shit, it would have got over, at least better than this did.
Do their NXT matches. You know, maybe not as long, but do a condensed version of those matches, which was way better than this one.
See, I would have put the Divas match in this slot and put this in their slot and done what Chris just said.
But the NXT matches worked more like a main event style.
Condensed version. That's what I meant.
I wouldn't have done that. I would have done full blown opening match spot fest with this, the way Dylan would have said.
Yeah, but those matches that went like 20-30 minutes. There's no way they would have done that here. That's what I said, condensed. Do it maybe 10 minutes, 10 to 15.
Do it 5 minutes, like a Juventud Guerrero Nitro match.
Yes, that's exactly what it should have been.
There you go. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It had no business.
None of these guys are Juventud Guerrero, though. So,
well, yeah, no, well, you know. But I mean, Neville. If Neville's going to get over, and they've done a decent job with him, but if Neville's going to get over, I don't even think he necessarily has to be all about the flips with a Z or whatever. But he's got to be somebody who, you have a reason to watch him. And right now he's fine. And he's over in front of some crowds and not over in front of others, but there's really no reason for him to watch him. He doesn't really stand out from the rest of the pack on the show.
He needs a counterpart, a heel that it works like he does. That's what he needs. All the guys he's worked against are total styles clashes compared to where he is.
I don't know, man. I mean, because if let's say Cesaro was a heel, Cesaro isn't like who he is, but Cesaro would work fine.
Well,
Cesaro's,
like I said earlier, it's a great lucha base, so he's different.
But that's
what's the difference
between putting Cesaro in there or Cena, or who else did Neville lose against? Rollins.
Plus, Neville and Cena was a good match.
Yeah. I don't know. I still don't think that they're promoting him as the guy who Gravity forgot and actually giving us the guy who Gravity forgot.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
It's a definite problem.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the next match. Elimination Chamber number 2 for their Intercontinental title belt that Daniel Bryan had held up. Mark Henry came out, Phil, but this isn't 2011, so the Hall of the Pain is not in effect. What'd you think about this match?
I'm not blaming Mark Henry for that. You're blaming Mark Henry for that?
No, but what I'm saying, though, is that nobody in their right mind thought Mark Henry had a chance in hell of winning, whereas in 2011, you believe that Mark Henry could win any match he was in.
This was bad. This, I don't know, it really felt like, I mean, it was kind of embarrassing how little veterans could improv. Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
But you guys were wrestling. These guys were wrestling for a while, right?
I mean, that well, Ron Killens has been wrestling for almost 20 years.
Yeah, the point where they got Sheamus got locked in the chamber and they just started doing like roll ups for two counts. It was like, man, it really felt like when you watch rookies who have put together an in the training camp match, and then they blow a spot. Like when you used to watch Rhett Titus on ROH cards in 2010, when he had some stuff worked out, when things didn't go wrong, he didn't really know what to do. And it's like, man, guys, Phil, something.
Phil, I know you saw the Jersey All Pro student shows back in the day. They were far better doing it than these guys are.
Yeah. I mean, it really it was like embarrassing how little these guys could improv when something goes wrong. And then I didn't think any part of that match was good. It was weird how bad that was for having all guys in it that I'm at least mildly interested in seeing. And even I thought they needed to do something to get the crowd back. And then having the section where, Ziggler and Sheamus kind of run through these 3/4 speed reversals. And then, having Sheamus and Ryback awkwardly drop each other on the metal and then not sell. I mean, it was a mess. It was by far the worst of these I've ever seen. And yeah, as bad as I can remember a pay-per-view match falling apart.
I don't know even if I disagree with that.
Wrestlers that I can't remember something this, but you guys watch a lot more of these than I do. But I mean, for competent professional guys, that was as bad a shit in the middle of the ring as I can remember.
Chris, anything to add to that?
This match had some, there was some issues with the ring. Dudes were just slipping and falling, and I don't know what the fuck was going on in this match. I haven't seen anything like that in WWE in a while, where guys are just falling down. And yeah, the stuff where Sheamus couldn't get out, and everybody just looked like they were completely lost for a while. Ridiculous. Barrett pinned by R-Truth. So ever since he got the crown, he's been the king of the jobbers in a lot of ways. I mean, it's terrible what they're doing to him.
They're just replacing the King of the Ring as the new IC title belt, which is what they used to do with the IC title.
And they were fighting for the IC title in this match. So how apropos. Ryback and Sheamus at the end, I thought was okay at spots. And I like to see them have, a straight match down the line. But and I was pleased with that Ryback one. I thought it was, good that he got rewarded for having a good year, because he's really had a good year this year. So good for him.
I don't know. I don't want to see Sheamus injured again. Dylan, what do you got?
I agree that Ryback winning was the best option with Rusev being out. But as a match, I thought it was really bad. I think everybody is going to be pretty down on this, but I do want to note here on air that we're all wrong, because wrestling deity Dave Meltzer thought this was a good match. We're all objectively wrong if you listen to some people. But this was, here's the thing about this match. I driving home Phil's point a little bit harder. Sheamus has been one of the best guys in the company for the last few years when he's been healthy. And Ryback, I think, has actually quietly had a hell of a year. He's improved by leaps and bounds. Barrett is a very good worker. I mean, it blows my mind. I thought this had, on paper, had match of the year potential, because Elimination Chamber matches typically have been very good. Like, generally speaking, they have been almost foolproof good matches for the last several years. Really going all the way back to 2009, when you had that the first great all-time Rey Mysterio performance. And it's, I wasn't necessarily expecting this match to be at that level, but I thought, man, there's no way that this is going to be anything less than a really good match. And it was a complete fucking disaster. Like, the Sheamus spot with the pod, that was so poorly executed, because the idea was that he intentionally locked himself in to wait for everybody to be down on the mat. And it was so poorly executed that the commentators didn't even note it or comment on it. Yeah. And just were like,
Oh, wait, that was what they were trying to do?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. Is that Sheamus took his cross medallion and shoved it into the bottom of the door and was pretending that he couldn't get out because he was waiting for his opportunity.
It was poorly executed. Yes.
But the only guy, JBL did reference it, but vaguely later he's like, Cole says something and he's like, yeah, that's just as true as that Sheamus couldn't really get out. And that was it. And that flew under the written.
I mean, it was unbelievable. That probably wasn't going to work anyway. But it was an idea that in theory works, but it didn't work at all in practice. And the match had already really gone to hell by then. And I also want to note, you know, for all the people who are super high on Dolph Ziggler, and he always works hard. That's 100% true. But this match, I mean, he took like a bump in the corner, like either on a pod or something on the, you know, on the, with the turnbuckles or whatever, about 56 times in a 5-minute span. Yeah. Because doesn't know what else to do. He's clearly clueless. He has no clue what to do in a match other than bump. He's completely at a loss at how to do anything else in a match. And it was mind blowingly obvious here. Like, to me, this was, you know, again, it's kind of piggybacking on Phil a little bit, but this is as bad a match I can remember seeing involving this many guys who are, I think, good in a long time. And it's made worse by the fact that it was in a match, a match type that historically is almost always delivered. I have no clue how this was as bad. It's shocking to me that this was as shitty as it was.
Wait, so you're telling me that they knew Sheamus wasn't going to get out of the pod and that just wasn't horrible improv?
That was the psychology.
Oh, my God.
because there was the moment that wasn't supposed to happen, I thought, and that was the fucking window falling down to Mark Henry's pod. And then the referees tell him, you have to stay in, and Mark Henry being smart enough to go, that doesn't make sense. Gets out before he's supposed to and goes out. And that's what I thought was them not being able to improvise, because Mark Henry wasn't supposed to be out at that point. And that's what fucked up all their heads. Exactly. This many guys who are that good can't improvise, but it wasn't the Sheamus spot. I think it was the Mark Henry spot. His pod was not supposed to break.
Yeah, this match needed that circus music. That's basically what it was. You know,
it needed Sweet Georgia Brown playing in the background.
It needed the Benny Hill music.
Three Blind Mice, Three Stooges.
This was significantly worse than the Chamber of Horrors match.
Oh, I just watched Chamber of Horrors the other day, and yes, it was. Chamber of Horrors is way better than this
match. Well, there's been Cage of Death matches in CZW that were Flair Steamboat compared to this match.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's interesting, but it kind of makes me want to rewatch your Hogan versus Eight Heels and
Tiny Lester. It wasn't as bad as that.
I don't know. I haven't watched that match in a
really long time. I rewatched it recently just to see. Okay. And oh wow, no. Because it would have been that bad if suddenly Ric Flair ran down to the ring and ate the pinfall.
I watched the match in the back of the Mack truck.
King of the Road, yeah.
A couple years ago. I loved that match. I thought that match was awesome. So part of me is like feels like I need to revisit this.
Yeah, Dolph should have went Brian Pillman in this match. I said, I'm not doing no jobs for you, Booker man.
What the fuck? Johnny, before you start, since it's your turn anyway, dude, I mean, I thought we were just talking to you, anyway, did you find anything positive in this match, Johnny?
The right guy won.
Very good. Very good.
There you go. The right guy won.
But now what did you want to say? I'm sorry. You want to ask
something else? That was what I was going to say. The right guy won.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. All right. Well, cool. Well, let's go to our main event. Zelner, Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose. What'd you think about this one?
It's funny that I just did.
Really, good match, bad match. What'd you think?
It's funny that me, Dylan, and Bix just did almost 7 hours on the death
about Dusty
the
finishes.
Death of Jim Crockett Promotions, and here's Dusty Finish popping up in 2015 WWE. What a shit show finish that was to that match. Oh my God. And the match was okay. I mean, Ambrose was really good in this, although Seth Rollins doing Triple H tribute act for most of this match. I don't know. I guess it's setting up that feud down the line because.
What do you mean he's doing a tribute act? You got to elaborate on that. You can't.
The way he worked on offense and he just had a lot of Triple H style psychology going on in this match. And it was there. And Ambrose was, I'm going to say, it was good, but I don't know. It was not a match that could have saved the show after the Cena Owens match. Cena Owens should have definitely been the main event of this card, no doubt. It had the better angle going on. It was the right way to go, but no, they got the authorities in the main event. You know, that's just the way it is. But nah.
Okay, I don't know, man. I thought after that first initial dive, where Ambrose took Rollins over into the announcers, I thought the match really picked up. I thought they accomplished the idea of you really had no idea who's going to win, you know, after that point. You know, a lot of near falls, whatever. I thought it was significantly better than most Triple H matches, but I didn't see the
Well, that's setting the bar low.
Well, I know, but it's to me, I didn't see the Triple H tribute show. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I don't feel like anyone can work worse than Triple H. So I don't know, man.
I can name 50 Dustin Rhodes matches, but that's one for old school Phil Schneider fans.
Hey, for people who don't know what Phil's talking about, back in the day of DVDVR, Phil Schneider did the Dustin Rhodes project, where he can name 50 Dustin Rhodes matches better than the best Triple H match, and. I don't know. How many did we get up to before you all just, like, lost
interest? Lost interest?
27, 28.
Like that.
It's
really, yeah. It's really good.
But, hey, to be fair, that was before his hot run with Cody Rhodes. That's when all that took place. Or when he did, like, some really good matches, like with Sammy Callahan on the Indies, right, Phil? So, you know, anyway, Dylan, this match.
I thought the match ended up being pretty good. Although not great, usually will help a match for me, but it's rare that a crowd will hurt a match. But to me, the crowd really hurt this, because even though you say that you sort of kind of bought in, I don't feel like the crowd bought into Ambrose winning at all until the dusty finish, oddly enough. Like, I don't think there was a single person in that building who thought Ambrose had a shot in hell.
Well, I didn't think he had a shot in hell, but I thought that they played it up well.
In the building, it got little to no reaction. Even the big spots up until the very end, like the last 2 minutes maybe, got little to no reaction. And this is, I mean, that's odd, because Ambrose has been really over on TV, but I think part of it is, you know, just Corpus Christi not being a particularly good town historically. And a part of it was that that terrible Elimination Chamber match had come right before it. So the crowd was probably already dead. Maybe impossible to have been salvaged at that point.
The curse of Clash 10.
There you go. But, to me, what's weird about these two is they had the best match on Raw last year, that tremendous match in August on Raw last year, where they did the injury angle with Ambrose at the end of it. Then they had the best match on Raw this year a few weeks ago to get Ambrose, you know, heated up for the four-way or whatever. But their pay-per-view matches, almost every single one of them has been disappointing. Like, I don't know that any of them have been bad, really. But they've just all sort of been like, it's pretty decent, but it's below expectations. I mean, they did some cool stuff in this, and they worked hard, but it wasn't anything special, certainly not enough to save this show. And the dusty finish was just, look, I know they haven't done one in a while, and I know that this was, in a way, a net win for Ambrose, in the sense that he ended the show holding the belt, and he got a pinfall, visual pinfall, whatever the fuck term you want to use on the champion. But dusty finish is not going to really help anybody at the end of the day. I just don't see any way this helps Dean Ambrose. To me, this was an absolutely fucking moronically stupid way to end the show. And it's made even worse by the fact that, you know, the WWE keeps Roman Reigns off the show, who's been their best big match worker all year, I might add. And then they drag him out at the end to sort of do this glory hog moment with Ambrose, which to me lends even more credence to my theory that there's people in the company who really don't want that guy to get over. I just thought it was a fucking disaster of a way to end a show. Like, if they had gone out there and had like a really great match, I don't even know if this crowd would have responded. But at the very least, I mean, Rollins winning clean, I think, would have actually been better than what we got. Because what we got was, you know, if I'm in the building, and it was another thing, when they announced that reversal, it was the exact same sort of audible fuck this reaction that happened whenever Cesaro and Kid got eliminated in the first match. So it was like the show came full circle at the end with the crowd. It was just garbage. Stupid fucking way to end a show. I don't think it helps anybody.
It was Chicago reacting to the Road Warriors not getting the belts in 88 or 87.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just fucking dumb. Like, there's no reason to do that. Like, there's no reason, because nobody expected Ambrose to win. So if he had lost in a screw job or if he had lost clean, oddly enough, I don't think the response would have been as bad as what they did. You know, it just fucking unbelievably stupid. And I'm sure somebody thinks, well, we haven't done this finish in a long time, and it'll help Ambrose because he'll be, at the end of the day, he'll have the title in his hands. But then they did all the shit with Reigns afterward, made him just fucking dumb.
Well, the thing with Reigns is they went, they teased throughout the night, you know, they basically went out and said, oh, this guy's going to turn heel. The way they had the promos in old wrestling, old school wrestling, the way they portrayed Roman Reigns in those promos tonight, was he was going to turn heel on Ambrose. You know, the whole deal with Triple H talking about, well, you know, if you run out, it's going to be a DQ, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it just the way Roman Reigns was acting with Ambrose. And then he was not even a factor at all in the match. I mean, you had this spot with the referee going out. That's where you get Reigns come out and fucking, you know, hit Rollins with the Superman punch, and then Ambrose cover him with a new referee coming in and make the count. That's why they could have done that shit if they're going to go that route. No, they just bring him out of the end. It's total stupidity.
And also, it makes Rollins look weak.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who really hasn't beaten anybody. You know, he's the – and people say, oh, well, he's supposed to be the sniveling heel champion. Okay, sure, but ideally you'd like him to be capable of beating somebody on the roster. He's just not – he's – no, nobody came away from that main event looking better. No one. No one involved with it.
Okay, Johnny, what'd you think?
Well,
did you enjoy it?
I did. I enjoyed the match a lot. Not quite so down on all the same things that Dylan and Chris are right here, but I just wanted to say that the fact that they did an actual dusty finish, because that's a term that's been bastardized over the years, but what a dusty finish is. Anytime someone, there's like a screwy finish, it's a dusty finish. No, this was a actual, all it needed was Tommy Young being the ref that got knocked out. This was a perfect dusty finish. Part of me was almost going, wow, I really haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, it kind of made you nostalgic.
I did. I felt nostalgic. I'm like, that's a real fucking dusty finish.
Come on, Johnny.
The only way it would have been better is if they would have not even announced that Ambrose, you know, was DQ'd. Had the show end with him the title, then on Raw the next, you know, tomorrow night.
And that's what I thought was going to happen. I actually
thought that was going to happen too.
No, I got up and went to go wash a dish to get ready for this and go get ready for this show. Because I looked at my buddy Chris. I'm like, yeah, they're going to reverse it tomorrow. And then they did it. And they did it tonight. And I was like, oh, okay. Exactly. I almost felt nostalgic about this.
Although I think they did do something a little better than your average. I mean, then maybe I disagree with the vitriol of Dylan in this. I think the fact that sort of that Ambrose goes, I don't care what the thing is, that I have the belt and I won the match, so I'm leaving with the belt.
They just did that with the IC title. They just literally did the exact same angle with Dean Ambrose, the thief of the IC title.
Yeah.
Well, so he has that's what he does.
But I mean, it kind of did like, but that I thought was kind of, you never really saw like, just, you know, Ronnie Garvin never did that. Well, you know what? Okay. I'm not giving this back to you.
I just hope this doesn't lead to Kane playing hide and seek with a title belt like R-Truth and Ambrose did.
It might.
Well, I would assume your ladder match in the next two weeks from now would be what they would do, right?
Well, they're doing Money in the Bank. That's the ladder match already. So I don't think that's the three.
Yeah, but you assume they're also going to do a ladder match at the... The ladder's already there. I mean, that's what it feels like. It sets up, right? You know, we're going to hang it on the wall. We've got some controversy about this. We'll hang it on the ladder. And
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
that feels like the natural booking rematch of that. But you're right. It's weird that they don't ever have really great pay per view matches. I thought this is fine. This is fun. This did feel a little like it went for your other really indie style near fallish match. This did feel like it went like 5 minutes too long.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's like, let's just get to the end of this where something stupid's going to happen. Just drawing this out here. Like, all right, wrap it up, boys. We don't get to the point of all this, which is going to be dumb. So let's get to it.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that's the show. Dylan, thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, thumbs down.
Thumbs down. I mean, like, to me, the only thing on the show that was really worthwhile was Owen Cena. And while it was absolutely great, it was in the middle of the show. So it's not like it even closed the show, which maybe would have sent it out on a high note. To me, this show badly needed your Roman Reigns to save the show, like he does with his great main event performances consistently now. It badly needed somebody like Luke Harper, maybe in one of those undercard matches, who's always good against anybody and can kind of save a match if it's off the rails. Like, I kind of don't think that the second Elimination Chamber would have been nearly as bad if Harper had been in R-Truth's spot, for example.
Or Rusev would have been in the match.
And the other thing, that's the other big takeaway that's worth mentioning, I'll just mention here, is kind of lost in the Owens win is the fact that not only did Rusev miss the show, but Rusev is kind of your new Lex Luger now. You know, here's the guy who couldn't get the job done against Cena. He failed, just like Luger failed against Flair all those times. And then now he's being replaced by the young guy who's frankly not as good as him, but is flashier and has a broader base of support, at least theoretically.
Would it be worse for him to be in that clusterfuck of a shitty fucking match?
Well, I don't know if the match is as bad if he's in there, but the reality is, you know,
that match was Mark Henry's fault.
I don't know what they're going to do with him. I guess you could argue that it's going to be better for him to miss time because he's been so horribly emasculated and destroyed over the last 3 months. But that's putting a lot of faith in them to bring him back in a credible way. I really think that one of the sort of big stories of this show from a big picture WWE booking perspective or whatever is the fact that Rusev was not on the show and Kevin Owens has sort of slid into that spot and got the win that he really needed. So,
yeah. What about you, Johnny?
I'm going to go thumbs in the middle just because I loved Owens Cena so much. Okay. Otherwise I would be giving the elusive Johnny Sorrow thumbs down.
I know that's a rare sight.
But that match, I just loved so much that I have to go thumbs in the middle.
Okay. I did.
I'm pretty sure if the show ended with us with Johnny Sorrow's childhood dog being murdered on screen, would still end up with thumbs in the middle.
Well, you know, Tippy. It depends how old
stuff film starring his grandmother.
Well, it depends how old Tippy or Grammy was at the time. But I wanted to say,
stop snorting into the thing.
When you say about it, that wasn't Mark Henry's fault. I thought the only veteran move that happened during that was when Mark Henry said, no, I have to come out of this because it doesn't make sense. And comes out and the ref's like trying to follow the script. Oh, stay in your cage or your pod. He made the call to, no, I got to come out. And I was like, the only veteran move made in a match full of veterans not knowing what the fuck to do.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'm going to stick up with Johnny. I put this at thumbs in the middle because of that match too. Also, I kind of agreed with Phil that the opening tag title cage match was a fun clusterfuck more than a actively bad clusterfuck. And I liked the main event except for the finish. But, you know, I thought the main event was fun. So I went thumbs in the middle. Phil?
Boy, it's actually tricky because I really liked Owen Cena. I didn't mind the tag match. I thought the main event was fine-ish. But then that second Elimination Chamber.
Oh, yeah, that sucked.
That was so bad that I think I'm probably going to have to go thumbs down. But, you know, I mean, that was bad and long. I mean, that was probably going to be the worst match of the year, I would think, right? And
I would say worst match of the year with that amount of talent.
Yes. Yeah.
No, that was a good match, according to Dave Meltzer.
what's going to be worse than that? I mean, there might be worse 3-minute matches, but that was like a 27-minute match.
I'm saying we still have a Money in the Bank that could go horribly wrong, man. I mean, it's still there.
I suppose. You know?
There are Hell in the Cells that could go horribly wrong.
Man, can you imagine? Never mind. I'm not even going to go down that. It's just the idea of Money in the Bank, like, which again, it's not a foolproof gimmick. They've had less than great ones, but if they manage to have two consecutive shows where the relatively close to foolproof match actually sucks that bad, holy God.
Well, Kofi's in it, so it's not going to happen like that. That's amazing how Kofi Kingston got into the Money in the Bank match just because he's Kofi Kingston. Not because he's worthy of the world title shot, just because of who he is.
Oh, who's in the Money in the Bank match?
Kofi.
Orton. Have they announced it?
Yeah, Kofi, Orton, Roman Reigns, Sheamus. I think Barrett may be in there. Ziggler's in there. A lot of guys that were losers in the Intercontinental title match is in the match.
Okay, well, I mean, Zellner, where did you stand on this?
Thumbs down. Way too much shit on the show that covered up the good.
See, to me, the only two shit shows were the Elimination Chamber and the ladies' match. So I think y'all are wrong. But you know,
oh, I thought the ladies' match was messianic compared to some of the other garbage on this show.
But I'm saying,
it was messy, but.
You know, like, if you look at Bo Dallas Neville, right, perfectly fine match. You know,
wrong kind of match.
I agree with that, but it was perfectly fine. Like, I'm not going to give a thumbs down because of that match.
I'm not going to give a thumbs down for it either, but you also every week and see better.
Well, match. Don't discount the booking in the main event in this whole deal, too. I mean, that was horrible.
I don't even watch Raw anymore, man. I've given up on WWE. I watch this purely almost to do the reaction shows with you guys, you know, because this is fun.
I'm telling you, Hulu Plus, hour and a half, it makes the show good.
I don't know about that, Johnny. I talked my buddy Pete does not agree with your opinion there, buddy, and he watches the same Hulu show that you watch. But
he told me the exact opposite the other day.
Well, Raw has been pretty good lately. I mean, last week was not great.
Shoot, Phil.
But Raw has been pretty good lately.
Okay. Well, maybe it has. I don't know. I'm not investing my time in Raw anymore. I like these shows because you get matches like Owens, Cena, or on the last show, we did, you know, Banks and who's the other one?
Becky Lynch. I will say this though: if you want to see a good Rollins Ambrose match, don't watch the pay per view match. Watch the Raw one.
Watch the Raw.
Be better, guaranteed every time.
And you know, this show really probably shouldn't have been a 3-hour show. I mean, and this should have been like an hour and a half at the most. They should have been done this like, you know, how you had your Saturday night's main event, and then you had the main event, which, you know, Saturday night's main event went. Like an hour and a half to 2 hours, and the main event was like a 1-hour show. The special show.
I mean, if if the fucking IC guys would have pulled it off and fucking had their shit together. You know what I mean? This, you know, I mean, really, that's what the besides the booking of the main event, which I agree with you, Chris. I mean, the dusty finish is not something I feel nostalgic for in any fashion. But really, I mean, the fucking the IC title match, fuck Dylan, right? I mean, we all thought it was going to steal the show. We thought it was going to steal the show.
What I would say is, remember, Chris, they got to fill 24 hours on this fucking network, man. I mean, you know, did you see the commercial for the put a whoopee cushion underneath one of Los Matadores prank show thing they're doing? That was horrible.
Give me the swerve.
I'm sure I would even rather watch that IC title match than that.
Well, here's
not going to be the worst. Is, I mean, it would be funny if it was really if it was Mr. Fuji like putting
killing a dog.
The thing is, though, Phil,
poisoning people or something.
The thing is, though, Phil, the highest rated shows on the network is that type of stuff. The original program. That's why they've ordered so much new type of shows like that. That's the highest rated stuff on the network.
Here's the thing. If either one of the elimination chamber matches had delivered, I would have probably said thumbs in the middle, or maybe even thumbs up, depending on how good they were. But neither one of them delivered. I mean, even if you think the tag match was a funnish clusterfuck, I still think it's hard to argue that it performed up to what it should have been. To me, at best, it was a disappointing but watchable fun clusterfuck. That's at best. And considering what we normally get, you know, we've been fortunate to see, you know, the New Day and Cesaro Kid team have a couple of really good matches on pay-per-view recently. You know, that's a net negative, because I don't see how this match was in the same universe as what we're usually getting out of the tag title match the last couple of shows. So to me, if either one of those had delivered, you know, I think maybe I would even have gone so far as to say thumbs up show. But when both of your major gimmick matches that the show is really built around in a lot of ways, when both of them sort of at the very least fail to meet expectations, and, you know, if you take a bigger, worse view like I do, think they both suck. Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to go thumbs up when over or the show sucks or even thumbs in the middle.
Yeah, see, you know, and like I said, I was not nearly as offended with the tag match as you were. But, you know, that's why we have differences, and that's where we stand on that. But, hey, Dylan, I know you won't be with us in 2 weeks, so we'll miss you. But, you know, life moves on. But, guys, I want to thank you for watching the show.
We have to do our guessing game at the end of this.
And we're going to talk TNA. The death of TNA. Let's do a little mini death of TNA.
Yeah. Let's get to the...
That's right. That's right, man. Yeah. I forgot all about that. Yeah, let's do the death of TNA. Okay, Phil, you can run this. I'll just listen.
So the question I had was I wanted to do a little guessing game. That out of the email that... is the Seymour Hersh of professional wrestling. David Vixen was able to uncover doing a LexisNexis search instead of, you know, that there was somebody in TNA who was repeatedly calling Ron Killings the N-word. So I thought we'd do like a round table a guess of who we thought that was. who do we think was repeatedly calling Ron Killings the N-word backstage at TNA? Johnny.
Well,
slur somebody.
It's supposed to be someone in a position of authority. So my initial feeling of Bob Armstrong, just so everyone go, oh, no, not really. We all love him. But come on, you know that word is past his lips more than once. Right. Okay.
Hey, that was Bob Armstrong. Was he in authority?
No. No.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's authority. Yeah, so position of authority. I'm just going to put it right out there and say Dixie Carter, because her first name is fucking Dixie, for fuck's sake.
That's a good point. It's a fair point.
Fucking Dixie Carter.
And she went to Ole Miss.
Well, that's what leads to my – I'll go ahead and do mine now.
From the South, Chris.
That's what leads to my guess. My guess is her dad, Bob Carter, because I'm pretty sure – I mean, he named his daughter Dixie. And I'm pretty sure he's had black men work for him that wore limo caps and stuff like that, saying "Yes, I'm master." So I'm saying Bob Carter.
I get the fucking kicked off this fucking show. God.
Well, no, I'm gonna get kicked off the show because I'm gonna say that it was Dutch Mantel. Now, I love Dutch Mantel. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. But he was definitely around at the time, and I think he was actually maybe even part of the Conan lawsuit. He, I believe, was one of the main writers for TNA at the time, and he totally kind of has that same, like, in fact, I would be shocked if, Dutch Mantel has never used that word in his life. Going even further than that, he transitioned a little bit too seamlessly into his Tea Party character, Zeb Coulter, when he went to the WWE. So I'm going to say Dutch, and with the disclaimer that the opinions expressed of me do not necessarily really reflect my opinions or the Place to Be Nation. I have to do that on all these now. So
it could have been Russo, but he would have said nigga because
God, he's him. Damn it, motherfucker! You just stole my joke. I had it queued up that it was like Russo trying to be street.
Yep. Okay, that's what you get for dropping the Johnny Loves Everything. Fuck you. Bam, I mic drop.
That's hilarious.
Oh, shit. I don't have fun now.
You know what? The sad thing is, whether Bob Armstrong was in a position of authority or not, every single one of those I could believe. Hell, was Jim Cornette there? Because, said it on camera before. I mean, every single one of them are believable, right? That's how bad TNA is, that, it's not like WWE where you just have your token racist with Michael Hayes. You have like an entire company that you would not be shocked if it was them.
Well, look at the finish of the Elimination Chamber match, the tag match. You had black on black crime, so,
Well, that match. That match was built.
Just
that, match was, built around like your racist prison tribes. You had the Ascension as your neo pagan Julius Evola reading crypto Nazis.
Well, hold on, because you got Cesaro with the shaved head who can be right there with them. Then you had your Latino gang, and then you had your black gang.
Cesaro is totally your European new rightist type. Tell me you can't picture like Victor sitting in a corner reading Julius Evola with like borrowing Triple H's Iron Cross regalia, Boyd Price as their manager. He's sitting around in the corner, like writing long treatises about how all immigrants should be deported from the United States. And then they just happen to go and beat the two Hispanic teams right out of the gate.
Amazing.
This is the worst fantasy booking of Oz I've ever fucking heard.
Oh. And you had New Day working as your new Black Panthers, but not as militant.
No. There's absolutely no Black Panthers in that. That's your Southern Christian Leadership Council.
That's better. The T.D. Jakes Army.
Hey, and since we're on TNA here, do you think that they end up getting dropped in September, Dylan?
I think that they will, but I think they're going to survive somehow anyway. I don't think they're going. Or, well, they're not going to immediately die. TNA finds a way to last. They find a way to hang on. I don't know how. I don't know why. But they never. Anytime that they seem like it's a sure death thing, they seem to last. So I think they will get bounced off Destination America. If not in September, not that much longer after that, although I think September is probably when they're going to get bounced. But I don't think they're going to be dead in September. I think they'll be around for a while afterwards.
Wow. Okay, what about you, Chris? You agree with Dylan?
I think they will not have an American television. I think they'll basically become a European promotion. That's where their value is right now. And
so that's how they're going to be saved. They're going to be the new XXW?
XWF.
No, WXW is the German promotion.
German one.
Oh, you? Yeah. Oh, they're gonna be like the new, like, what was it? The bigger version of Preston City Wrestling or something like that. What's going on?
There you go. No, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume they're gonna end up on you know, they'll get a deal where they show pay per views live on Daily Motion or something like that. I mean, I feel like at some point they'll just get some deal. We'll talk it out. It's like the next future Vimeo. Fusion Wrestling.
Well, don't be surprised if they're cutting a backroom deal with Gabe, because Gabe was sucking their dick all weekend on Twitter.
Shilling it on the Evolve shows. They were constantly.
So don't be surprised. Yeah. Don't be surprised if TNA comes to WWN Live and if Dixie's just working Gabe to get into that lucrative China market. Like, yeah, I would not be surprised at all to see TNA. End up doing something with WWN Live. And by the way, I think part of that deal is deliberately TNA's way of sort of saying, fuck you to Ring of Honor.
Totally.
You know, for Ring of Honor daring to cut a smart business move and actually put a decent television show on Destination America.
Yeah, on the commentary, Lenny Leonard and Ron Neamey both were, you know, filleting TNA during Davey and Drew Galloway's matches both nights. So yeah, there's definitely a smoke to that fire.
That means I get to see Low-Key versus like Gulak or Thatcher or Busick. That actually is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. Austin Aries comes in.
Yeah, Busick's going for his tryout though in June for NXT.
All right.
And Gulak, I think they'll be going too.
So. Then Low-Key versus Thatcher. Low-Key versus Speedball Mike Bailey would be really great.
That would be, that'd be quite the match there. They would definitely mesh well.
I'm back in on Low-Key.
Okay.
I'm back in on Low-Key.
Johnny.
Back in on Low-Key.
Johnny, do you watch any TNA?
Watching that JPW.
No, I don't have cable anymore, and so no.
Well, nobody else has Destination America either, so.
And you know, and I don't think I had when I had DirecTV. I'm pretty sure I didn't have that. I had that hunting channel.
It wasn't that name. It was Velocity. It used to be Velocity, and then became Destination America.
I had that hunting channel that had some indie on it that Matt Hardy.
No. Superstars used to be Velocity.
It's true,
but no. I just think it's the denial of. I understand, you know, when you really like something and want to be in denial about it going away, you know. But some of these people are just. I'm like, wow.
Well, TNA's PR director is basically Jim Jones. You know, they're basically feeding the Kool-Aid out to all their fans, and they're all taking a sip. I mean,
how quickly did Billy Corgan drink that shit?
He's lost his fucking mind. He's as crazy as Bob Ryder now. He'll be suing children by the end of the month.
I had no idea. I always thought the guy was kind of rational, a little freaky, you know, whatever. But
I don't know. Smashing Pumpkins stunk, so.
Who gives a fuck about the band? I'm just saying, like, he comes across as a fairly reasonable guy. I mean,
now he's a nutcase. These people are all nuts. Speaking of Bob Ryder, since I buried him on the last show, let me bury him a little bit more real quick.
Go for it. What happened?
Give us the update. Ryder, being the worthless piece of shit that he is, we talked about on the NXT show, like, how he tried to piggyback on Joe's moment. And sort of shamelessly beg for a job, if you read between the lines there. Well, he's, you know, then of course he's filleting Ring of Honor for being on Destination America, sort of promoting that, which they didn't even bother to promote on their TV the other night, by the way.
Yeah.
And they completely ignored that. But you know, so you got Ryder putting his money down there. And then he was also one of the lead people, him and Gabe Sapolsky, totally... absolutely giving each other hand jobs all over Twitter, talking about how great each other was all night the other night. So Ryder, you know, is sort of like the human version of TNA. He just hops from host to host, taking up space, doing nothing to earn money, doing nothing to make a paycheck, because he just kisses people's asses and constantly finds his way into promotion. So the count is now he has done everything he can to try and get in with NXT, Ring of Honor, and Evolve / WWN Live, and I have reason to believe also with House of Hardcore. So he's already he's prepared to move on to his next company that will inevitably fail as the bottom feeding piece of shit that he is. So,
you know, one thing we got to talk about though is the whole.
So who does he have pictures of?
Who knows?
Chris Harris.
Yeah. Well, the one thing we got to talk about though is the whole contract re-signing deal from this week. Which, you know, they were announcing contract renewals from guys that renewed in January. And, like, some guys that had renewed three times this year to try to make themselves seem relevant. And then they were just, like, going after people for, you know, reporting they went after Alvarez, you know, for being negative and stuff like that. And then you had Dave Shearer on the Pro Wrestling Insider, you know, coming out and saying, well, hopefully Austin Aries will resign soon. I mean, just totally just throwing, you know, well, he had no credibility anyway, but now just totally, you know, just showing himself what he is. So, I mean, it's insane watching all this stuff go down. I mean, this has been quite, if you're not on Twitter, this was a week you missed so much shit. Oh my God. It was quite the week.
All right. I'm kind of glad that I missed.
Dave Meltzer was in Hall of Fame form this week on Twitter too, just taking out people left and right.
Well, let's make sure that we check that out. Let's wrap this up, Phil. Anything going on in Segunda Caída?
I'm gonna actually have a review of a JPW show up in the next day or so. That's got a really fun Loki versus Chris Dickinson match. Reason I'm back up on Loki. We're doing back to doing war reviews, so we've been doing some of those lately. And yeah, some other shit. We have a live blog of this where I repeat most of the same jokes that I used on this thing. So if you want to read the jokes that you just listened to in text form, in addition to Eric's jokes, you can go ahead and do that over there.
Nice. All right. Zellner, all right. What's the next best treat? Phil, you got us on your speaker.
What?
Come on, motherfucker. Put your headphones in.
My headphones weren't working.
Okay.
God damn it. Zellner, what's going on Bad Street?
Well, the last episode was uploaded the other day, part two of the Death of Jim Crockett Promotions. So go check that out, especially in the timely manner of the death of TNA and tonight's main event finish. And I'm taping the next episode this Tuesday. So look for that one to drop sometime next week. Wes Hatch and Rob Naylor back for more. Talking about the workers this time, not the promotions and the indies.
See what I mean, Phil? He can't have us on or can't have you on once, but can get Naylor on twice, Dylan on three times, Nick's on three times.
Like I didn't go to some ECWA shows back in the day. Like, I'm not a guy who watched a Rick Blade match or two. Like, I don't know.
Like I didn't watch Jim Cargill promotions.
Yeah, we see how Zellner is. Anyway, Dylan, what's going on there in wrestling culture land?
We are going to do the Sheep Herder show when Dave gets back from Cuba. Dave is actually on vacation in Cuba.
Only Canadians can go to Cuba.
When he gets back from that that paradise, looking at visiting the Bay of Pigs again. He's been before, by the way. I may be breaking kayfabe by talking about this trip. So if so, I apologize, Dave, but screw it. So when he gets back, we're going to do our Sheep Herder show, which will be a lot of fun. And I probably will have a written piece up, I don't even want to say what about yet, on voicesofwrestling.com sometime in the next week or two. So if you care, you can check it out. You can keep checking out there to see if I've got anything up, or you can follow me on Twitter at Dylan Waco.
I think Dave's down there just to do research on an upcoming project on Fidel Sierra.
Oh, God. That would be awesome.
And Johnny Sorrow, Titans, Brainbuster, anything?
Next Brainbuster is going to record on the 13th of June. It'll be out that evening, and I've been writing it, and it should be a lot of fun.
All right. Sounds good.
It's just everybody listening to podcasts, they're afraid to have me on. just some bullshit.
Phil, I want to have you on.
Yeah, it's like you appeared.
Yeah.
He's
full of shit. He's already invited me back three times, Phil, and I haven't been yet. Anyway,
I don't have an instant connection to Phil, but definitely, Phil, I want to get you on the show. seriousness.
If we've learned anything tonight, all of y'all are full of shit. Except for me. There you go. Except Dylan. All right. Well, no, you're full of shit too.
You're abandoning us
the next time, man. You're abandoning
us. You can't have me on to talk about Fidel Sierra. I've seen a Fidel Sierra match or two.
The next time, hold on. It's my mother's birthday and also Flag Day.
Oh, you're not going to be moonlighting with Shake Them Ropes?
No, man. No, it's mom's birthday, you dick.
All right.
Hey, let's all recommend some match they should watch on YouTube instead of watching what they watched tonight.
There you go. Is Negro Navarra Traumas match still up there from like 5 years ago? That's my YouTube match.
No, I don't think so, man. I think Bacteria took all that down.
Well, I still have a copy, so I'm happy.
I'll go ahead and say
Dylan, what's people? Yeah.
The Dragon Lee Viru stuff from the other night in Arena Mexico from the Leyenda de Plata. Go watch that shit.
Sweet. Dylan?
Go watch Steve Corino yell at my dad. That's on YouTube. Steve Corino versus Ray Fury. The match is just okay, but that's kind of entertaining.
Dylan, you got to PM me that link. All right.
I will. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
PM, PWO. Johnny, you recommend anything else?
Yesterday I went through a binge of watching that 1984 A Year in Transition, Crocker Promotions stuff that's on YouTube. And I never realized how huge of a character Dick Slater was during that time. There's some cool shit in there. So
I was really hoping you were going to say, I never realized how hard trans people have it.
Adrian Street was working there at the time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, thank everybody for listening to the show.
Mine is Derek King versus Del Tucker. Derek King bleeds a lot, and referee gets thrown through a table, and some fun 2015 Derek King.
Oh, that's from this year. I got to watch that.
Well, Derek King had a match with Dustin Starr that was really good that recently I watched.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he had a Brian Christopher match, which wasn't that good. Sort of disappointing, but this Derek King Del Tucker is him working kind of a garbage match where he bleeds a lot.
And Del Tucker
using high top fade.
Del Tucker looks like the bastard son of Mr. Donnie, so that's worth watching.
Del Tucker is a fucking sleazy looking dude.
I'd also just for fun and shits and giggles, the NRW, which is our local indie here, and I went to the show and had a great time, even though it kind of, you know, was terrible, but had a great time. No, because the atmosphere was fantastic, and so they do a YouTube show, NRW something or something. Look it up. You will see or hear at one point in the main event match between Sammy Six Guns Jr. and some other dude. The dude was selling his leg, and he does a kip up, and he sells that it hurts to do the kip up. And I just yelled, "That wasn't wise." And he looks over and goes, "I know." And it was just a wonderful evening.
Nice. All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. We'll be back in 2 weeks for Money in the Bank. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.